I am Luke MJ Powell, and this is Your Favourite Film's Awful, the show where we take your favourite movies and defend them against negative reviews. I hope you're doing well. Theme music!
Your favourite film is awful.
I have come with another guest. His name is Sasha. Hello, Sasha. How you doing?
Hey, Luke. I'm good. How are you?
I'm very well. You been up so much?
Not too much, just...
Good, I don't care. Shut up about that. What film are we doing?
We're doing Predator.
We're doing Predator?
That's right.
Interesting.
Not to be confused with The Predator.
Oh. So we're talking the original Predator.
That's right. We're going back to the 80s.
Ooh, very exciting. Okay. So, of course, at the beginning of this, because we're defending the film against negative reviews, we need to understand what the film is. For those at home that haven't watched the film or not watched the film recently... Give us a spoiler-filled synopsis.
Spoiler-filled?
Yes.
Okay.
At the end of the day, if they're listening to this, I fucking well hope that they've watched the film.
I hope so, too. If you haven't, go quickly watch it and then just keep us on pause until then, right?
Or don't, because maybe at the end of this, I'll decide that it is awful and then they won't need to watch it.
That is always an option.
It's always an option. Give me that synopsis.
I doubt it. But, okay, so Predator, basically in a nutshell, deals with a group of commandos sent to undisclosed location in South America, very jungly rainforesty area, take down a bunch of rebels and to take some prisoners back. On the way there, they realize that they've been set up, and to add insult to injury, there is also a Predator, a sci-fi creature that's flown in to hunt the most dangerous game, which is a bunch of beefcakey 80s action stars in this film. And that is generally the premise. It is very simple. It's a very kind of not a baggy movie. It just kind of cuts to the chase right away. It's mm-hmm. about a bunch of kind of what you would expect at 80s action stars to be, going into the jungle and then being picked off one by one by a giant alien before one of them sort of tries to turn the tables and kill him himself.
True.
Yeah.
And it was interesting because, of course, I rewatched it for this very podcast and I realized that it's actually fucking awful. And it's not a very good action, adventure, sci-fi bullshittery. And Susie kind of summed it up best with this half-star review, stating quite clearly, an 80s slasher film, but the killer is an alien, and Arnold Schwarzenegger is the final girl.
Yeah, that is pretty much, you know, hit the nail on the head there. I don't understand, I didn't take anything negative out of that. That sounds kind of cool to me.
Well, I guess because it's pitching itself as an action-adventure sci-fi film, but in reality it's an 80s slasher film.
This is true, and I would say that to this review, you, Arnold Schwarzenegger is not dressed like a typical final girl. He is actually wearing a lot of commando fatigues, and he looks like he's just gone off the set of Commando into this other film. It's almost like a spiritual sequel of sorts, but it is a slasher, and I think what makes it a good film, and I think this is sort of kind of what I like about it, is it does start out as a movie that you think you've seen 100 times over, and halfway through it turns into a completely different film. And I think the tonal shift is very, very well done, and I think that one of the things about it that's really, really good is you go into it and you kind of... The marketing behind the film at the time was quite clever, I think, because it's just got Arnold Schwarzenegger on a poster holding a giant machine gun. There's just some sort of crosshairs on it, and it just says Predator on it in big, bold letters. So you're thinking, okay, is Arnold Schwarzenegger the Predator? That might be it at the time. But it sort of subverts your expectations completely to the point where you... not even sure if Arnold Schwarzenegger is going to survive the film. And I think any movie that would make you doubt whether or not Arnold Schwarzenegger is going to survive is an effective film. And I think that's kind of where this movie turns into a slasher, where you think that the final girl might not even make it.
Yes, no, you're right. That is good. However, I do disagree a little bit in the fact that at no point was I worried that Arnold wasn't going to make it out. Does that make sense?
I think so. But I also think that at the time when it came out, it might have been a bit different. I think in the 80s...
I don't think so still. Because you've got, so Sigourney Weaver on the Alien poster, at the end of it she's five. So you've got Rocky, he's the main guy on the poster, and he's not dead at the end of the film. And what was the other big one? Oh, there was another big one that I've forgotten entirely. What's another big film? Big action film where the main guy's on the front.
Any Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Any
film.
Arnold
Schwarzenegger. Any Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Apart from
film,
Terminator. Basically. That's the only one where he's on the front and at the end he kicks the bucket.
That's true, but he's not. Yeah, he is actually. He's on the front of it.
Which actually lends credit to your previous idea that the poster and the marketing kind of makes it seem that maybe Arnold is the Predator. So just a sci-fi version of the Terminator.
Yes. And I'll caveat by saying, like, yeah, I think that we've sort of experienced these kind of films enough to understand how they might work structurally. So if you've seen 100 action films, you definitely know that the good guy's going to make it. And if he doesn't make it, you know, hats off to the filmmakers for being kind of quite ballsy to do that, because it's very much like they want to end on a high note. But what I think what happens throughout the movie is that most good films and most films that are well structured will sort of have you doubt yourself a little bit and have you kind of think that, well, maybe he might not make it, you know, and it might just be a split second. It might just be like you think it for like a really quick second. But I think that good movies will make it so hard for the protagonist to pull through that you will be scratching your head thinking about, you know, what is going to happen here. And I think in Predator, what's really great about it is that plot structure is so well defined that there is a whole sequence of Arnold Schwarzenegger trying to figure out how to kill the Predator. Yes. And I think at that point, when everything is sort of lost and he's kind of defeated almost, you know, he's covered in that mud crawling out of the river, and the Predator doesn't even spot him, and it's just a lucky fluke, a lucky accident. At that point, I think that as an audience, the beats have been so well that you're kind of like, okay, well, he has no idea what he's doing. He's so out of his element that he's like, and now he's got no gear, so what the hell is he going to do? And I think that is, you know, that's what makes that movie really, really good, because most other Arnold Schwarzenegger films, they don't have that moment where you're like, how's he going to pull through? You're kind of like, okay, well, he's been beaten down and now he's going to come back and kick everybody's ass. And it doesn't really matter how he's going to get there. It's just like, we know it's going to happen.
Ish. I agree, ish. I think, so you know when just before the gets the chopper line?
Yes.
And he gets shot and he falls to the ground and then he screams at the woman.
Yeah.
But that hit, the plasma cannon hit that hits Arnold, barely leaves a mark. There's like a little scratch on him for the rest of the film, whilst everyone else has massive gaping holes in them. And that was the moment I was like, no, no, there is no fear for Arnold. There's no fear here. But to lend into Susie's point about it being an 80s slasher, when Arnold's not walking, he's like crawling in his little trench where he's set a trap. And the Predator is just doing a classic 80s I'm the monster and I'm very slowly going to walk behind you and come kill you. And that shit was so funny to me when I noticed it. Because it is just, this is an 80s slasher bit in this big action movie.
It is, but I think it lends credence to what the Predator is. And I think that over time we've learned a little bit more about him in pretty like subpar sequels and things like that. Maybe good comic books, I've never read them. But I think the thing about the Predator is he is a hunter. He does like to stalk his prey. He doesn't want an easy sort of, you know, he doesn't want to make it too easy on himself, but he also wants to give whoever he's hunting a fair chance to be able to fight back. And I think in this case, it kind of makes a bit more sense. Whereas in like a Friday the 13th film, or even like I think one of the most recent examples I can think is like Jurassic World, the second one. I forgot what it is. The Fallen Kingdom, right? Fallen Kingdom, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah. Well, Fallen Kingdom is quite funny because it's like, it's doing the same thing that the previous film did, but it's like now we've got super Velociraptor whatever.
Yeah, it's
Velociraptor Rex. It's like the most like crazy combined dinosaur. I think in that film, it's quite funny because the filmmaker is basically just like picking and choosing when the animal's trying to be this sort of ravenous, like, crazy animal that's just running around eating people, and when it's stalking its prey, mm-hmm. like Jason, you know? It cuts between these two, like, moments where you'll have Velociraptor just, like, running at someone and just, like, being crazy, like, rabid creature. And then other moments, there'll be, like, a girl hiding in her bedroom, and he's just, like, slowly stalking, looking for her. And it's like, what is this creature about? Because it's just you kind of picking and choosing. Mm. Because I think in The Predator, there's a little bit, you'll notice throughout the film, that he does think, and he does learn, and he does kind of adapt to how he sort of pursues his prey, which I think is quite interesting.
I agree. So, Susie, you're right, but it's not at the detriment of the film. It elevates, because it mixes the genres quite nicely.
That's right.
So let's go to Soundscreened. So this is going to be a 3 out of 10. It's titled Underwhelming.
Okay. All right.
Looks like the only people inspired enough to comment on this movie are the people who love it. So I guess I'll be the voice of dissent. I watched this for the first time after seeing the entire Alien series as a way to prep for Alien vs. Predator. I didn't expect much, especially after seeing the trailer, but I was surprised by how boring this film is. The characters are completely two-dimensional caricatures, stereotypes, with no development whatsoever. The plot drags along. The only quote-unquote action is lots of shooting and marching around in the jungle. And the Predator doesn't even show up until an hour into the film. The lines are cliché, and there isn't an ounce of tension or investment into the characters. By the time the first 20 minutes were over, I was actually waiting eagerly for them to be killed. If you're into clichés, this movie is for you. If you prefer something with a bit more depth, stick with Alien, the original, not the sequel.
Interesting. I wonder what he gave Alien vs. Predator. Because it sounds like he was quite anticipating that movie more than this film.
Mm.
I think that there's a lot of wrong in that, but there's also a couple of things to point out. I think that this movie is quite simple,
mm-hmm.
and I think that if you are thinking about it or looking at it in the scope of like what this means for the bigger sort of shared universe of aliens and predators.
Ah, yes,
and
AVP.
The classic films. I think that this one is quite simple. And it might kind of come off as a little bit sort of simplistic and a little bit kind of quaint. But I think that that's sort of the charm of the film. The film is not trying to be a big universe-building film. It's not trying to be this movie that's starting up these like sequels that are going to come after it. I think it's a very simple story about kind of doing the most dangerous game, but with an alien.
What? You mean to tell me that in 1987 they weren't trying to kickstart the MCU of AVP?
I mean, no. Luckily not. And luckily every other attempt has sort of been kind of like cancelled quite quickly, which is great because we don't want a big universe. I think that it's true, though. I will say that this film, it is devoid of character development. It is not a very deep film. But I will kind of counter argue that I don't think that Alien had that much character development in it, if you think about it.
I think the difference is you can kind of get a better handle on those characters because half of their character is their job.
Yeah.
Whilst with Predator, they all have the same job.
Yes.
Which is, we are big, strong men in a jungle, with the only exception being Billy, who's out in front going, I'm going to track stuff because I'm slightly Native American, I feel.
Yeah.
Like, if anything, I've got to credit, the cast is so diverse, but it is kind of just big, strong men who get a couple lines.
Well, we can break it down. Let's break it down because I think that this is a good time to talk about maybe the cast and the people in the film because it's got an interesting sort of collection of characters.
Mm.
Part of it is like you'll have these like B beefy kind of guys trying to one-up each other, both behind the scenes and in front. There's a fun fact where I think Jesse Ventura, who plays the guy who shoots the machine gun, he was getting fitted, and he realized that his biceps were bigger than Arnold Schwarzenegger's. And he went up to Arnold Schwarzenegger, and he was like, I bet you that, like, my suit is bigger than yours. I'll bet you, like, a bottle of champagne or something like that. And Arnold Schwarzenegger, like, turned around, and he measured his, and he was like, actually, mine are bigger. And it's because he had told the, like, costume department to tell Jesse Ventura that his were bigger. Mm-hmm. So this is the kind of, like, people that are on this movie. And I think that it reflects very much so in the characters that they play. I don't think this movie is trying to make some sort of deep, you know, kind of character-driven story. I think that it's basically a very much a subversion of type. And I think this movie sets out to subvert your expectations by basically saying, like, what if we got, you know, the 80s version of the Avengers together on a mission? You know, like the 80s version of, like, B-movie action stars. We got them together and we sent them off into the jungle. Like, there's no way they could be, like, out hunted by anything. And you have those kind of guys, and then you have Billy, who's kind of an interesting guy. And I think one of the more interesting guys in the story, because he's the one that gets a clean kill from the Predator. Because he sort of rips out his spine. And it's, yes, like, one of the few times you see the Predator do it, and I think that's sort of the Predator indicating that it was, like, he died an honorable death, and he keeps his skull as a trophy, because he's the only one that fights him by knife.
Mm.
And he's sort of like the tracker. And then you also have a random guy who kind of looks like Shane Black, but is not Shane Black, who's in it for, like, a split second, and then you have Shane Black. So there's one other character who I always forget the name of. And then there's obviously Shane Black, who basically, I think he was the one that was just kind of on the crew and on the cast to help, like, punch up the screenplay. But he spends most of the film just cracking really, really obnoxious jokes that aren't really, really funny.
Isn't that Shane Black?
Yeah. That's Shane Black. The other guy is...
Because the other guy is the guy that kind of looks like...
Poncho. Richard Chaves.
I want to say Jude Law, but it's not. Who played... Who's in the Christopher Nolan film Inception and is also Robin in The Last Batman by Christopher Nolan?
Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Yes. He kind of looks like...
Okay, there's a little bit of that.
Early version.
He's very much like a character that you don't really remember exists until you rewatch the movie. But he has one of my favorite lines where Jesse Ventura is just, like, shooting up the jungle. And he's like, careful, you're bleeding, or something like that. And Jesse Ventura turns to him, he's like, I ain't got time to bleed. And he turns to him, and I think most people remember that line, but I think what happens right after is the funny part. It's like that guy Poncho just turns to him, and he's just like, okay. He's just acknowledging how ridiculous that line is, basically. And I think that's kind of funny. But
it gets better than that. Don't you remember? Because he goes, oh, okay. And then he fires off a grenade. And then presses himself against the wall and goes, you got time to duck? And then just all of this rubble showers them.
That's so great. Good. Which is, I guess, like, again, like a good example of the fact that this movie is just, it's subverting your expectations for these kind of characters. It's not trying to give you character development, but I don't think it's trying to do that.
Mm.
You know, I think it's trying to very much, like, put you into the perspective of these people and how they survive. And yeah. I think that's kind of it. Mm. I think, you know, it's just, it's sort of, I think it goes to show as well, like, how far movies have come now, where it's like, you get, like, a 3-hour film that could be an hour and 47 minutes, basically, like Predator, where there'll be, like, a backstory, and you'll see, like, what their lives are like before they go into the jungle, and you'll have all this kind of buildup. That's not really necessary for a movie like this. I don't think it needs to be, like, a very deep character-driven film.
Mm.
You're in it for the thrill, and you're just kind of, well, you know, you're introduced to these characters in a way where you can kind of figure them out. You don't need a lot of complex sort of, like, build-up. You can kind of figure out who Jesse Ventura is, what his character kind of is like, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think to go off your point about subversion of character it's Mac. So after Blaine dies, he's the one that starts shooting into the jungle. And it's that kind of, this entire film, he's been the very stoic, he's off to the side, he's a little bit creepy. And then the moment his, as it's revealed, like his best friend dies, and he just goes off the deep end, and he is like very emotional. He's like, I can still help, I promise. But also, I'm going to fucking get that guy. Yeah. And it's so good.
Yeah, you start to see like all these characters slowly break down.
Mm.
And I think that's kind of where you start to see a little bit of change in their character. I think it's that kind of, that's maybe the closest we'll come to character development in a Predator is people going slowly insane, trying to kill the Predator. Which I think is, for this movie, it works. And I think they pull it off quite well.
I agree with this. Would you like a review of the times? So a review from 1987.
Yeah.
Yeah? Are you sure you want this? Because
this is great.
It brings the fire.
Okay. Let's hear what they said.
So this is from Neil Gillett from 1987. 28th of August 1987, to be more specific. Remake Alien with a setting of the Central American jungle instead of outer space, and you have a dud on your screens, if Predator is any guide. Sketchily written by Jim and John Thomas and sleepily directed by John McTiernan, it has Arnold Schwarzenegger leading a band of armed CIA agents on a mission to save Honduras, or some such country, for democracy. Having more or less dealt with the commies, the White House warriors run into a spot of bother with a creature from who knows where. The film takes almost an hour to get going, has a brief burst of action, and takes almost another hour to wind down very slowly. If you get a kick out of watching men with big muscles roll around in mud to the accompaniment of pretentious music, Predator may have some appeal. But I suspect even Rambo and Rocky fans will find it boring.
Okay. Who? What's his name?
Neil.
Well, Neil, I'm going to have to interject here and say that you totally didn't understand the plot of the film, because if you actually listen halfway through when they are done with their mission, liberating the commies, as you say, they realize that they've been set up by their leader, Carl Weathers. Yeah. Mm. And now they have to sort of make their way out of the jungle to the landing pad, and they're not very happy. And they've kind of been put under, you know, under fire for very nefarious reasons. So I would say that this is maybe more of a critique of America's involvement with South America. And I think John McTiernan, as a director, who, by the way, did a great job directing this film. Wait, No, he went into the jungle, and literally, if you listen to any of the behind the scenes, he had to like cut down individual like trees and branches just so he could get like a long shot or a long zoom. So the setup of this movie took a lot. And obviously, he's dealing with so much ego. Like, I can't imagine how much ego is on the set. And he's managing to get performances out of these people that are pretty good. But I think that going back on what he was saying, like, even if his next film, Die Hard, is quite sort of also very critical of, like, the FBI and the government's involvement in sort of terrorist negotiations and things like that. So I think that maybe this movie has sort of this kind of edge to it where it is kind of sort of criticizing it a little bit, you know? Our friend Neil, I think it's Neil, right?
Neil,
he compared it to sort of Aliens with a dud. And I think that's the thing, is the hook is Aliens is literally a sort of thematic commentary on the Vietnam War.
Mm.
As James Cameron has said in kind of interviews, it's about these troops going into this area and sort of being quite gung-ho, quite confident, and then just being overwhelmed by all of these sort of like alien forces that just basically push them out and overwhelm them, and realizing that they don't have what it takes to make it through. They're basically, their journey is turning into one of survival. And I think that Predator is kind of copying Aliens a little bit in that kind of regard, but it is a very similar story. It is about a bunch of soldiers going into an environment where that they are unprepared for and then dying off one by one. So I think it's much more critical than Neil thinks it is.
In Neil's defense, he spoke about Alien, not Aliens. However, you made great point comparing Aliens and Predator. So, good point.
That's true.
Misdirected.
Well, I think that Neil, given that he's not really paying attention much to the plot, maybe he's not even paying attention to which Alien movie he's talking about, because it sounds like he's lost the plot, pun intended. But I think that the other thing about it that he mentions, and I think that this is kind of true, is he's kind of like, people that have seen Rocky and have seen Rambo might be bored with this film. And I would probably agree. I think if you're going into it expecting to see Rambo 3, expecting to see, I don't know, Cobra or like some sort of Sylvester Stallone film, you're going to be disappointed because, you know, as Susie has said earlier, it is a slasher film halfway through the film. And I think that it's kind of not going to be what you expect it to be from an action film. And I think that Neil was quite thrown off by that and didn't really know how to process it.
Yeah, no, I agree with this. I think the fact that it is a slasher film hidden within this action movie of bravado, I can imagine in the time, because it's something a little different, it took them off guard and they were just like, wait, this is still an action film, but now it's shit.
Yes. Where are the explosions? There's only one explosion.
To go off your point earlier about ego, and I thought you were going to bring up this story as well when you brought up the big muscle story, the 1-inch, 3-inch story. To go into egos, I'm sure you knew, but maybe the audience didn't. The cast members wouldn't go to the gym at the same time. And all of them tried to give this bravado and ego of, oh no, I'm naturally this muscly and I've naturally got this pump on. And so if two people were in the gym using the equipment, and I think Carl Weathers says this in one of his behind the scene interviews, he'd go in there with a drink, see them going, oh, working hard, are you? Okay, sip, leave, and then wait for those guys to leave the gym before he went in to do his workout. So that nobody would see each other do the workout and no one would acknowledge the fact that they have to do all these reps to keep their muscles big and strong, because it's all that bravado of, no, this is all natural. I naturally look like this. You have to put work in? Ah, oh, disgusting.
It's crazy. I read somewhere, and I don't know how true it is, but Jesse Ventura would pour buckets of water over himself when he knew that Arnold Schwarzenegger was coming into the gym, just because it made him look like he was perspiring a lot more. He was like, this is how much I actually sweat, because this is how hard my workout is. So, I mean, there might be some truth to that. I think it's quite silly. But no, I think it is like, that is the testament of probably how hard of a job John McTiernan had to try and wrangle so many egos and into this movie where you're basically like, you know, you're that strong guy that everybody knows you for, you know, being that strong guy. Well, now you're going to die. Now yeah. You're going to yell. Now you're going to freak out and go crazy. And I think that's kind of that it takes a lot to kind of
toll. Yeah. It's hard work acting strong you're strong, because you can't just at your normal level of strength. You have to be an exaggerated level of strength. So you need to do the pre-workout and the post-workout to make sure that you are now an exaggerated level of strength to match the character and the acting that you need to put on, because you can't just be your normal big strong self.
Exactly. It's quite funny. I mean, it's also like, it's just like, you know, like looking at how movies are made now and looking at the equivalent of you know, the stars that do things now, like Vin Diesel has it in his contract that he can't lose a fist fight in a movie. It is a contractual obligation that he cannot lose a fist fight in a film. Now imagine like having to work with something like that. Like that would be kind of difficult. That would be kind of a challenge to do anything that the actor wouldn't want to do, or something that he would think would make him look bad, I think would be quite difficult.
What's also interesting is, of course, because this is 1987 compared to now, so now we've got strong people in TV shows. The Boys, for example, this is where I'm going to do a direct comparison. So, of course, for Predator, you've got people working out in the gym, you've got bodybuilders, they're doing hour-long runs, then shooting in the sweating heat, and then doing another hour-long run, maybe sneaking some gym inside. And then The Boys, season three. Jensen Ackles, so of course he came in for the new guy. He's the new guy on the scene. When he got that role, he was like, okay, he turned it up to 11. He was like, I'm going to work out all the time. So, of course, there's that lovely shot when he comes out of a tube looking fucking fit as fuck. But when he, the first day he came on set, he spoke to Anthony Starr. And Anthony Starr just went, why didn't you ask them to put more muscles on your suit?
That's great.
So it's like, back in the day, you have to do all of the work to show this to the audience. But nowadays, it's like, oh no, we can just add some padding to your clothes and we can just CGI any stitching and we can just make you look bigger.
Getting the filler in.
Yeah. So it is that kind of the caliber of what is expected of people now, to especially at these extremes of these were bodybuilders and strongmen anyway, and they were like, hey, just pump up to 11. Whilst now it's like, oh no, you are strong now. We'll just CGI some more muscle and we'll make you look better now. So it just kind of streamlines it a bit.
We'll fix it in post, basically, like the saying goes.
The beautiful line of the modern era.
We'll fix your biceps in post, basically.
We'll make them bigger. Okay, so now I've got Yule with a 3 out of 10.
Okay.
This one's kind of already split up into different points, so we can take our time with it. We can enjoy it. This one also has a title. Makes Commando look like a Shakespeare masterpiece.
Wow.
Sorry. But I still don't know why people keep considering this as a classic. One, it's just a show for Arnold Schwarzenegger's body.
Okay.
Would you agree with that? I'd say he definitely gets to take off his top and show off all them rippling muscles.
It is a show, but I don't think that's the main focus of, you know, it's not his bodybuilding video. It's not him working out. Makes Commando look like Shakespeare. I would say Predator is a better movie than Commando. I'm not sure why he's thinking that Commando is better than Predator. Again, that's quite interesting, because I think also, like, you look at Commando, you look at Predator. Predator is essentially like a self-aware version of Commando, kind of making fun of his character in Commando, because he is sort of this sort of generic built-up action hero. So I think that, to me, like, Commando, it's quite interesting, because it seems like, I guess, Arnold Schwarzenegger, most of, like, out of anyone, out of these kind of 80s action stars, seems like he just, like, ages the best. Because if you look at him in, like, Total Recall, which is, like, 91, and then you look at him in Commando, which is, like, the start of the 80s, it's, like, 10 years. Mm. And he hasn't really changed that much. He still kind of looks the same. And I think in Commando, in Predator, it's kind of the same. This is like almost a decade after Commando's come out. So much stuff has happened. You know, damn. Predator's 87, Commando, I think, is 80 or 81. So there's been this huge amount. And yet, it literally looks like he walked off one set and onto the other without skipping a beat, you know? And I think that is kind of a testament to, you know, how sort of invested he is in that kind of persona. But then again, how invested he is also in sort of subverting that persona, or trying to subvert it as much as he can. He's not the greatest actor. There's not a lot of range in Arnold Schwarzenegger performances, but I think what I like about him, and what I think is really interesting about him as opposed to many other action stars, is he's kind of always been able to dive in with directors and be like, use me in whatever way to help make the movie good and to help make this the best performance you can for the film. And I think that has allowed him to take on more interesting roles. And I think Predator is sort of maybe the start of that, where he's kind of like, well, these are the expectations people have of me, and I'm going to try and sort of subvert them in certain ways, in what's expected of me. And then that kind of continued on in, like, Total Recall and, I guess, Junior and Kindergarten Cop to, like, a lesser extent. But it's sort of like he's having fun with the role, and he's picking and choosing things that aren't necessarily going to be about him doing a gun show for an hour and a half.
Cool. Okay, two.
Yes.
Zero logic in this film. This is his second point. I love how short and sweet it is.
Define logic. What is logic? And like how do you define it for a movie like this? Because this movie is silly from the start.
Logic. Reasoning conducted or assessed according to strict principles of validity.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, you can kind of throw that at any movie, because most movies probably throw logic out the window when it doesn't suit what they're trying to tell. There's not a lot of logic to this movie, but I think also, again, going back to what we were saying earlier, this is a movie about people going crazy in the jungle. Logic's going to go out the window.
Yeah, I think... Fair. There are some questionable actions, like Billy stopping on the... like. He's like, no, I'm not going to run anymore. I'm going to plant myself like a tree on this tree. I didn't think that sentence through. Takes off your shirt, does the stab, and then he's like, cool, I'm going to kill this predator before we get to killing him off screen. Which, hey, maybe that's not in everyone's wheelhouse of, oh yeah, in that situation, I definitely do that.
Yeah.
But I think for the most part, it's some guys are given a mission. Cool, this is our job, we have to go do the mission. No thought needed, because the logic is, I am man who need to do mission, I go do mission. Then they get to the place, they complete mission as far as they are aware, and oh no, we're tricked. Okay, cool, new mission, get the fuck out of Dodge. They call the radio people, and it's like, yeah, we know you want to get out of Dodge, but there's fucking gorillas everywhere, they won't let our choppers come in, you need to at least get... so many miles away for us to pick you up.
Mm.
So they go run a couple miles. I think logistically it makes sense for their actions. Like on the broad scale of like, we need to do A to the B to the C to the D. I have no problem there. I think there is sound logic of objective completion, new objective completion, new objective. Oh fuck, everyone's dying. But the lady gets there. So that's a mission success.
Yes. Yeah, you know, it's kind of just a couple of things popped into my mind while you were describing that. I think that one of them is the fact that, again, this is a slasher film.
Mm.
Horror movies tend to have some of the worst decisions ever made put on camera. And the other thing that this movie kind of reminded me of a little bit, and this might be a bit more, you know, it might be harder to go from one film to the other film because they're quite different, is the Blair Witch Project.
Okay.
Because the Blair Witch Project is a movie about, you know, a couple of teens, I think they're teenagers or they're maybe in the early 20s at that time, going into that's the sequel. going into a forest, going into a haunted forest, thinking that they're going to find footage of something horrifying, going into it of sound mind, making sound decisions, and then slowly succumbing to this kind of madness. A, because obviously there's some weird kind of witchy stuff going on, but B, also because they slowly start to lose their minds. Mm. I think what makes that movie so effective as a horror film is, you know, obviously there's this sort of unseen evil, you know, that's kind of permeating everywhere. But at the same time, you have these sort of normal, everyday sane people that just slowly start to go crazy. And I think that there's something, you know, empathetic about that, something that you can kind of relate to. And I think at that point, it's like you understand that, you know, there is no logic. They're not going to think their way out. They're going to start doing things based on their gut instinct and on, you know, their survival instincts. They want to survive. And I think that in Predator, it's exactly the same thing. It's all these people going into the jungle with a purpose, understanding how they're going to do it, and then everything that they're sort of used to goes out the window, and they're slowly becoming frustrated and angry and starting to like lose the plot a little bit as all these unseen and kind of crazy things are happening around them. And I think at that point, it's not about logic. It's about kind of trying to survive and making some pretty bad errors in judgment.
True, true. Okay, point number three. Predator can't kill Schwarzenegger as other actors because he is the star. I guess Predator was afraid of losing his job.
So he's afraid of Predator couldn't kill...
Predator can't kill Schwarzenegger, as he did with the other actors, because Schwarzenegger is the star of the film.
Yes, but also I think that it, you know, he puts up a good fight. He puts up a good fight. Arnold Schwarzenegger, like, he has to basically detonate almost what is perceived to be a Predator nuclear bomb in the rainforest in order to like try and kill Arnold Schwarzenegger. That's how hard it becomes for him. And I think that it's just that part of the film, to me, it was always kind of had a good structure to it, because there's moments in it where, particularly towards the end, where like Arnold is supposed to be, and I guess his name is Dutch. Dutch is supposed to be luring the Predator into this like trap that he set up for him.
Yes.
And he's like, come on, do it, like get into the trap. And it's like, he's already been beaten up the Predator quite a lot. You're kind of seeing the ending in sight, and the Predator slowly creeps up, and he knows what's going to happen, and then the Predator just like catches onto it, and he spots what the trap is going to be. And I think that's like a nice, neat note. You don't have to have it in the movie. You could have just ended it with him kind of killing him, but there's still this kind of idea that, you know, he's still a thinking, living creature, and he's still like a good hunter. So he's gonna be aware of any kind of lame traps that you lay out for him. And so it's sort of like, you know, if plan A doesn't work, he has to go to plan B, but he doesn't really have a plan B. And I think it's kind of well done, where you're sort of like keeping the audience on their toes. You're not sure how it's all going to end up. Arnold could die. He's going to kill the Predator. I think that's definitely something.
At the end of the day, it's a bravado action movie, so your main guy's going to survive, even if he's a little beaten and bruised. But what I found interesting is that for all his, come on, come kill me, what are you doing, come on, I don't think he actually wants the Predator to come on, because that's not how the trap works. The trap is fully, here's a branch with spikes on it, and underneath there's a tripwire that drops a log over there.
Yeah.
So it's very much like if the Predator had just ducked, I guess Arnie would have just kicked him and hoped for the best. Be like, please get on my spiky knives. Please, God.
Just kicks him. Just gets so frustrated and just kicks him. Yeah, I think it's kind of a bit of... there is a bit of convenience there.
Mm.
But I think at that point, you're kind of... You're so wrapped up in the story. You're just kind of trying to see how it's all going to end.
I wasn't saying it was convenient. I was saying, hey, it's smart. Because I think he, what's the thing? She doth protest too much. Like, he's giving it all big. Come on, kill me. Mm-hmm. Come into this very obvious trap so that the Predator goes round. I think the Predator's playing checkers and Arnie's over here playing chess. And he's like, yeah, come into this trap. Come into this. Oh no, I shouldn't have said trap. Whoopsie daisy. But in reality, he wants him to come over to the left so he can kick the pole and smash his head in.
Yeah, he's like kind of thinking several steps ahead, because that's how he wins.
Exactly, because that's the beauty of Predator, is because their weaponry is meant to be equally matched, they're on quote-unquote level playing field, it is, even with all the bravado and muscles, it does eventually turn into brains versus brawn, with the Predator bringing all of the brawn at the end, and it's only human intellect that ever surpasses and achieves victory.
Right. It's not like a fist fight to the death. It becomes more of a cat and mouse game.
Exactly.
Which is, again, I mean, to kind of show that that's not really a muscle show for Arnie. It is more of him trying to scramble and figure out how to survive, which I think is kind of not what the ethos is of the 80s action star kind of playbook. You know?
I don't think any other action star is just like curled up into a corner being like, come on, hit me, please. Come on, I did hit me.
Come get me. I'm going to have to rub myself down with mud now so I can make it a fair fight. Yeah, and I think that sort of goes to show, because I think the next film is obviously a masterpiece. Maybe you've had it on the podcast, maybe not, but Die Hard.
Die Hard is a masterpiece.
Is sort of him. Like, I think Predator is sort of the lead up to Die Hard, because Die Hard is exactly the same. Breaking down what your expectations of an 80s action star are by basically being like, what if it's just like a regular cop who can barely, like, you know, have a fist fight with like a giant lumbering like German ballet dancer? Like, what if he's like barefoot and he doesn't have anything? Like, how does he survive? And I think that taking almost like I think like Predator is almost like the run up to that, you know. I think that like without Predator, like Die Hard might have been a completely different film.
That's such a weird thought to have, isn't it? Like, yeah. This sci-fi slasher action bravado, if you didn't have that film, you wouldn't have Die Hard.
Yeah, I think...
A Christmas classic.
I mean, I guess not, maybe not as directly, but I think that what's interesting about the 80s is you start to, like, especially towards the end, and then, like, the 90s kind of come in full forces. There's a lot more self-awareness.
Mm.
And towards the, like, the latter half of the 80s, it starts to become more prevalent. And you have things like Big Trouble in Little China, you have Predator... These movies start to kind of become a bit more self-aware about what they're doing. They're not really giving you like a wink with what they're doing, but they're starting to figure out like, well, you know, this is what the audience expects. And these are the cliches that were kind of like in the genre. So how do we subvert them? How do we make them more interesting? And I think this is sort of the start of that. Or this is one of the first few films that kind of starts to do that in its own kind of genre.
Okay, point four. They killed at once two black actors, as they couldn't wait to get rid of them.
That's,
And I believe that's a lie.
Yeah.
Because they kill... So they kill Glasses, and they kill Blaine.
Right. Shane Black and Blaine and...
And then it's the, as they say, two black actors.
Yes.
Yeah, and then Poncho gets shot. Billy gets killed. Poncho gets finished off.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got... Two white guys die first.
Yeah.
And then you have your two black guys, and then you have your two, I guess the closest ethnicity that I can remember would be white guys, but I don't think that white.
But let's even rewind a bit further back, because you spend the first 20 minutes killing a bunch of, like, rebels that are not even, like...
This should be where the problem is.
This is...
Oh my god, why do they go to a Latin American place
these people...
and just butcher a load of... Why is it that the only Latin American individual gorilla that they keep is a very attractive lady? What the fuck's that about?
That's true. The damsel in distress is not very... She's kind of like... Yeah, she doesn't really get a lot to do in the film. She's kind of understand... She sort of fills them in with some backstory because she's sort of... She's been around the Predator. But I think, it is kind of a bit weird that they kind of shoehorned her into it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think the movie starts with so much murder and mayhem that I don't think that those are the first two people to die in the film.
Yeah, I think you all kind of reached there.
Yeah.
He was like, oh, I need a fourth point.
Mm-hmm.
Racism. It's definitely a racist film.
I don't think that's the case. No.
And then we have a nice little paragraph at the end. I really don't mind popcorn films like Commando, Tomb Raider, Justice League, etc., but to make a cheap, boring popcorn movie and promoting it as a classic, that is the worst thing you can do in a film industry. It reminds me of Friday the 13th or Twilight, a film with nothing gained millions of dollars without knowing why. I really wish you had added some punctuation to that last sentence, because I have no idea what the fuck he means.
Well... I mean, first off, I hope you're not a programmer at any cinema, because Commando, Justice League, and Tomb Raider would be a crazy triple bill.
Maybe that's the secret. Maybe he's onto something.
Maybe he is onto something. Maybe he's just... But also, I think Nothing to Gain... I don't know if Justice League is to be considered money well spent. Just because of the fact that that movie was so, like, slapdash, thrown together for the first theatrical release after it was, like, taken away from Zack Snyder.
Mm.
And Tomb Raider is, like, it's okay. It's subpar. I don't know what you saw on that one, Yule. I guess, like, Commando's the only one, but I suppose that it's kind of interesting. I guess it sort of becomes in the eye of the watcher what action movies are worth your time and which ones aren't your time.
Yeah, it's the whole art is in the eye of the beholder sort of thing. He found more art in Justice League. Didn't specify which Justice League either, so this could have been Justice League.
Yeah.
Which Justice we all League. Hate.
Could have been the Snyder Cut. Maybe could that's why he's cut. Like, you know.
That. And when did... Does it say when that review came out? 2018. No, Zack Snyder was cut, came out 2020, I think.
Justice League.
Mm. So I mean, this is Justice League.
Yeah, this is like, you know, they... I mean, you'll... If you are listening, I just wanted to let you know that they spent over $1 million trying to CGI Henry Cavill's mustache off for that film, which I don't think is money well spent.
No, I don't. What I love is, we're talking about Justice League now. What I love about that as a nice little bit of trivia is, of course, they wanted Cavill to shave his mustache so that he could do the reshoots, but he couldn't shave the mustache because he was in a contract for Mission Impossible. So Warner Brothers went through and got loads of shots without him having a mustache and CGI'd him with, like, put a mustache on him to show the people at Mission Impossible to be like, hey, come on, shave it. Look how easy it is to put a mustache on his face. And didn't realize that they'd given their own reason to why they should have just given him a mustache throughout the entirety. Mm. Just give Superman a mustache, because now they know how easy it is to just slap a mustache on him.
Oh, man. Well, I mean, Superman with a mustache would be quite kind of weird.
I think he has had a mustache. And I think it was really? After he died. He, like, came out of the grave with a mustache.
I guess so. I mean, maybe his hair keeps growing. Maybe he comes out with, like, a big gray beard. Yeah. Like, that would have been kind of cool.
It would have been so cool. But yeah. No. He died and his hair follicles were like, I'm good. I'm dead too.
We're done. Yeah. I mean, it's just kind of ridiculous, that whole story. But, I don't know if any of those films have more of a reason to exist compared to Predator. I don't know if Predator has more of a reason to exist, but I definitely think, if anything, they're on par with existing. And if anything, I would say that Predator, I get more bang for my buck in terms of entertainment.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, it's funny that you're singing its praises now, because that's what I want you to do. So, let's say, hypothetically, but very possible, somebody's listened to this entire podcast. They went into it not really caring about Predator. They heard your synopsis and went, oh, okay. They've heard some negative reviews and went, oh, okay. This is your opportunity to turn it around. Give a review. Sing its praises as to why anyone should watch this film.
This is a tough job.
I know.
Yeah.
People's enjoyment is resting on your shoulders now.
Yes. I would say, I guess, to me, this isn't... I'm not going to deny it. This is an acquired taste of a film. I think that you would have to be in a very particular mood to watch this movie. Mm-hmm. It's not an easy... You know, it's not like you're watching Minions or something, which you can easily get into and have a good time or something. But I think Predator, what makes it great is it's not like every other action film. It is a different movie. It's a different beast. And I think that the actual beast in the film is quite interesting. I think if you like sci-fi, this movie does quite a good job of creating a very cool sci-fi environment in terms of the creature and how it hunts. Mm-hmm. I think if you like action films, this has some good action to spare. This has some classic Arnie one-liners. This movie is kind of the best of both worlds. It's sort of like you're watching two movies mixed together. And I think that the direction is probably something that is very, very solid. John McTiernan is coming out of doing his debut feature, which I don't think I've seen, and I don't really know, I haven't heard a lot about, but this was his second film out of the gate. And I think that previous film wasn't really as well received. So I think when this one, he really was like, I have to prove myself. I really have to hit the ground running and make a good film. And I think it shows. I think the movie is very well directed. I think there's some really well composed shots. I think there's a really good eye to directing action in this film. I think there's a really good way of building suspense. I really think there's a lot of memorable death sequences in the film. You know, the sniping sequence and the sequence at the end. Mm-hmm. There's so many cool moments that I think that it's kind of worth your time for that. It's also kind of a great movie to watch to see the influence and how it sort of carried over into action movies to come. Because I think that it has a lot of things going for it that have been reused. You know, infrared vision, I don't think it was being used as much in movies since then. But now, like, night vision and infrared vision and these kind of things have kind of come into play a lot more. Not just in action films, but in horror films as well. I think night vision has become a very, very prominent kind of cliche that you use in horror films.
Yeah.
Apart from that, I think you have some fun dialogue and fun banter between these actors. I think that you go into it basically expecting an action film, but you kind of come out of it being like, this is an action film that likes to have its cake and eat it too. It likes to be very self-aware about what it is. It's not denying what it is, but it's just leaning into that and being like, you know what, can we make the best version of this movie that we can? And I think that it succeeds in that kind of way. And I think the only drawback I would say is the invisible CGI. I think,
really?
Yeah, I think the only thing that didn't work for me a little bit in this time around watching it is the CG, the shots of the alien, because he has, you know, invisible camo.
Mm.
Moving through, it is a little bit kind of very of its time.
Yes, I think it is very dated, but I do like it. I quite liked it. And it was that weird kind of retro effect where they were trying to make it work. And I think they accomplish it of, because you look at it and go, oh, okay, there's something invisible there. But it is kind of like a weird ripple within. And it's just like, I can see you tried. And I appreciate that you tried, but you didn't succeed the best.
It is kind of, I think it is the best they could do. Because I don't know if you know about this, but there was an original alien.
I do. I was going to bring that up.
Yeah.
The big red lobster.
Yes. Well, I think he was green. I'm not entirely sure. Was he red? He was red.
He was red so that they could CGI. Because, of course, they're in a jungle.
That's right.
Put green on green.
No, green screen. Played by Jean-Claude Van Damme.
I'm sorry.
Supposedly, I think the rumors go that it was Jean-Claude Van Damme in the alien suit. Which kind of would have made it even crazier, but I'm kind of happy that they went with a more kind of... Because if you look at the creature, he looks like a giant kind of... almost cockroach running through the woods.
Yeah, it does not look good.
I think another plus is the creature design. Everything about the way that they designed the creature, from its tech to the way that it looks when it takes the mask off, to the way it sort of lumbers, it has a real presence. And I think Stan Winston, who did the creature designs, also kind of worked a lot with James Cameron and has a really prolific career. You know, if you could take anything from this movie, it is the creature design. That is something that has sort of stood the test of time and been reused over and over again, because it's just so well defined and so well designed that we kind of, you know, we might take it for granted these days because it's all kind of CGI and sort of, but I think...
I mean, you say that, but in Prey, they had a guy in a suit again.
Oh, they did?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
I guess for some of the more action-y shots, you have to CGI because actor can move that well in a rubber suit. But there is footage of him, do you know when they're in the encampment and he's like in the middle... I'm trying like not spoil, because that's not the film we're doing.
Yeah.
But and he does a big old roar.
Mm.
It's a guy. It's just it's a man with like some animatronics in the nice. The old face.
That's awesome. But I think the idea of it is sort of, you know, these days you could just kind of design aliens without having to really think about how they would walk or how they would move. You know, you sort of, there's a bigger suspension of disbelief. And I think what makes the Predator so good as a creature is there's a lot of thought put into how it sort of moves, how it breathes, how it does all these different things. And I think that's sort of a big testament to the film.
Yeah. And for that, we've got to give props to Kevin Peter Hall, the guy in the suit.
Yeah.
Because, of course, he's like fucking really tall. He's like 7-8 foot, which is why he got the role.
Yeah.
It's so that he could make the big, strong man Arnold Schwarzenegger not look that big or strong just because he's this tall as fuck guy in a big muscle suit.
Intimidating.
So
guy.
Good.
It is. It is good. And one more thing is the score. I think we didn't really touch on that as much, but I think that. Someone mentioned the score was a little bit
cheesy. Pretentious. And it, pretentious. In fairness, it kind of lends itself to that kind of commando. It is kind of... It's just all like big action songs from memory.
Well, the interesting thing is it is Alan Silvestri, mm-hmm. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly, who scored Back to the Future.
Oh, shit.
Which is kind of interesting. Yeah. So it's sort of... what I find funny about the soundtrack, or what I like about the soundtrack, is, first of all, it gave one of the best sort of pieces of music in any suspenseful film, which is the sort of that snare drum. The banging of the snare drum. It's like you feel like you're being pursued or something. But there are moments in the soundtrack where, like, the music was kind of swelling, and I think it was, like, towards the end when Arnie's fighting the Predator, that I was kind of taken out of it a little bit, where I was like, it kind of sounds like I'm listening to the Back to the Future soundtrack. There's a little bit in there that kind of seems like it is very Alan Silvestri kind of doing Back to the Future a little bit, because he likes the kind of, like, the giant swells of music and things like that. And this, I think the soundtrack is quite different. There are moments that kind of make you feel like, I think I've heard this in another film before, and I think it's Back to the Future.
Fair. Okay, my opinion, it's good. Yeah. It's all right. The issue is right. And this is your first time here, so I get to explain this to you. Like I've said many times, unlike you, I've been swamped in bad reviews for the past day and a half,
right?
Which corrupts my judgment supremely. And you've done a great job to just push some of that away. But the bottom line is, could have been about 10 minutes shorter, 15 minutes shorter. I think it does dwell a little bit in that first hour. Could have been just a little faster getting into the 80s slasher of it all. But then I'd also like a little bit... Strangely, I want more time with our commandos.
Yes.
But also I want it to be quicker to the Predator.
I think that I like the slow build.
Mm.
I think what makes this movie kind of interesting, and maybe we'll get more into this with the double bill stuff, but I think that if you were to take out the opening of the film,
mm-hmm.
of the spaceship flying and landing on Earth, and you just started with Arnie, you wouldn't really, and you didn't know what this movie was about, and you're just kind of going into this movie going in blind, just Arnold Schwarzenegger action film, I think you would not feel like it's taking too long to set things up, because I think it really, it sort of follows a very interesting structure where it's like every act is a different part of the story a little bit. They're not related, but they sort of spin off into the next one as it happens.
I think if it wasn't for that opening 5 minutes of here's some stars, here's a spaceship, hey, we're setting this up for later, I think you'd have more complaints about it was this great action movie, and then suddenly they just veered off to the left. This fucking alien came out of nowhere. What the shit was this?
Yes, you got to be adventurous for that. But exactly. I think the other thing about this is, I guess this is your favorite movie, like the podcast, your favorite film.
Your favorite film is awful.
It's awful. It's exactly. Awful.
This is awful.
This is
until
awful.
I say whether or not.
And I think what makes this movie good, and I think what makes this movie stand the test of time, it's not like you're watching The Godfather. It's not even like you're watching Jaws, where you're watching something that is just like so impactful and so like has such like cultural significance. This movie knows what it is and just sets off to try and be the best version of itself that it can be. In terms of it is an action film.
Yeah.
It is a movie that's just like very, you know, quickly going into it and coming out. You know, it's an hour and 40 minutes, I think, so it's not that long. But it just like everything is fine-tuned to make it as entertaining as it possibly can be. And I think that's kind of what makes it one of the greatest films. It's not trying to kind of reach for something greater. It's just trying to do the beats the right way, you know? Okay. Like a good cover band, but better. But with better. More aliens.
Look, audience, in the black and white scale, it is awesome. It's not awful. It's worth your time. As Sasha has rightly said, give it a watch. There's some great scenes. Yes, could be a little bit quicker. You know, I think that's my critique for a lot of movies, to be fair. It's just like, this could have been just a little bit quicker. You already touched on it. Double bill. What are you double billing this with?
This is interesting.
There are some obvious picks.
Right.
So we've got Predator. So, of course, naturally, you'd want to do the sequel.
Yeah, Predator 2.
Predator 2. Predator 2. It's Predators, isn't it?
Nope. So you have, chronologically, you've got Predator, Predators 2, Predators,
Oh, God.
Oh, no, maybe it's Alien versus Predator. Alien versus Predator Requiem. Predators, The Predator, and then Prey.
Oh, shit. Okay. Yeah. I thought it went Predator, Predators in the classic Alien, Aliens.
No. Kind of,
well, I feel foolish. Okay, so Predator, Predator 2.
Yeah.
You've also got Predator and then Alien, or Alien and then, yeah, then watch Predator. Predator and then Prey.
Mm-hmm.
Predator and then Terminator.
Yeah.
I think all of these great, obvious picks.
Yes, I think so. You touched on Aliens, which I think would be a great...
You tip. Touched on Aliens earlier. Yeah. Matt really like honed that in for me. It is that kind of one versus many in Predator, and then many versus many.
Yeah,
exactly. In Aliens.
Yeah.
It's really good.
Yeah. So for me, I guess, thinking about this, I would double bill this with a 90s film called From Dusk Till Dawn. Which
That's the vampire one, isn't
it? The vampire film, yeah, that was written by Quentin Tarantino, directed by Robert Rodriguez, who then went on to make Predators as a producer.
Okay.
The reason why, I think there's a couple of reasons, and I've been thinking about this, is that, number one, both of these movies are something which I kind of coined. It's sort of the rug pull movie, which is you're going into this film, you're thinking that it's one thing, and then the rug gets pulled in off halfway through, and you're in a completely different film. The stakes have been sort of reset. You're not sure what's going to happen. So I think that would be number one. I think that's the thing, is if you take out the spaceship out of Predator, you kind of have the same thing as you would have for Dusk Till Dawn. Because From Dusk Till Dawn, apart from the title and maybe the poster, like, if you don't know what that movie is, you go into it and you're watching a crime film until halfway through it becomes this crazy vampire movie.
Valid. Yeah, no, that makes sense.
And it's these kind of films, and I think that's what I really like about them, is when they sort of twist and become something else halfway through. Not all of them do it well, but these two movies, I think, are perfect for it. The other reason, I would say, is I think that From Dusk Till Dawn also has a very interesting ensemble cast of actors in it.
Yes.
All of which are character actors that have been, well, not character actors, but sort of like B-movie actors that have been in a lot of sort of genre films. You have Tom Savini, you have Danny Trejo in it, you have Fred Williamson, who, if you're not aware, has been in a lot of kind of sort of B-movie films, has worked in a movie called The Inglourious Basterds, the original. Yes. You have these sort of collection of sort of kind of who's who of like B-movie horror films, action films of late 70s and 80s, which I think kind of adds a similarity or at least a parallel to The Predator. And so I think you can kind of have these kind of movies where you sort of, you go into it and you're kind of like, oh yeah, Jesse Ventura's in this, or that's Shane Black. In the same vein, you can go into Dusk Till Dawn and be like, oh, that's Danny Trejo, and like, oh, Harvey Keitel shows up in this as a preacher. Like, there's all these kind of like interesting roles that pop up, and it is kind of very much an ensemble cast of characters. And so I think that that's what makes these two films a little bit more similar, and I think worth watching as both double bills. You know, I think when you watch a double bill, if Predator is the first film, the second film should probably be something that is meeting it in a certain way. It can't be greater than, because I think if you follow up Predator with Aliens, I mean, as much as I love Predator, I think Aliens is kind of a masterpiece, and it is a film that is slightly kind of edging it out as being one of the greatest sci-fis of all time.
Very clearly, my idea for a double bill. And I think you kind of you fucked it up a little bit by saying about how you shouldn't pick films better or worse. They have to be on an equal playing field. Because I think you should watch The Thing.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they're both aliens. You've got that the tension of them all losing their mind. They're not sure what to trust, where to look, what's going on. Both very good. But as you said, I think The Thing, for me, is a fucking masterpiece. And this is really good, but this is like a cult classic, good macho movie, whilst The Thing is up here somewhere. And for those listening, my hand is as high as I can put it while in a seated position.
It's definitely, I would also say The Thing is, I mean, it makes a good pairing. Yeah. I think you're right. You could watch both movies.
Mm. I'd say watch Predator first and then watch The Thing.
But I think The Thing is very, it shares a lot of DNA, but it's a very different tonal film, I think. just in the sense that it's not... there's a lot less thrills and a lot more paranoia and very unsettling creatures running around. I think that that Predator is very much a genre film through and through. It is trying to be a genre film. And I think that, you know, for that, you'd want to pair it with something else that is also trying to be a genre film through and
through.
That's
fair. Yeah. But if the criteria is something from outer space comes down, fucks a load of people up, then I think you're a shoo-in with that selection.
Something from outer space that comes and fucks things up that's ruined by having the spaceship land on Earth in the first few frames of the film. Yes, those are them, and they're exactly toe-to-toe. Because like, if you take out the first 2 minutes of either film, you would get a really, really fun movie that people have no idea where it's going.
Exactly.
It's just a bunch of, you know, the thing is just a bunch of people trying to shoot a dog from a helicopter. If the movie starts with that, you're just like, what am I watching?
Brilliant. Okay, that's time. Awesome. We've been talking for a while. For those at home, where could they find you if you want to be found? Do you want to be found?
I do, but I don't know where. I'm lost. Lost in space.
You're lost in space.
On the Predator ship. Yeah, they've kidnapped me, the Predators. I don't know.
Twitter?
Yeah, maybe on Twitter. Sure. My Twitter handle is Mondo_Jones.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just an alias, but one that might change in a bit. You can also find me on Letterboxd, I guess. That's doing reviews, trying to sort of... Sure that you watch all the right cult classics by giving you some good lowdowns.
Beautiful. Well, that will both be in the description, and I hope people follow and see what you're up to and see what films you're watching. Because, again, somebody may have listened to this entire episode, and then they'll be like, let me check his letterbox and see if I agree with some of his opinions before I commit to this 100-odd-minute film.
Yes, I hope so.
Cool. And for those listening who... this is their first introduction to Your Favorite Film Is Awful. You can also find us on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. For those, it is Your Favorite Film Is Awful, apart from Twitter, which is Fav Film Is Awful. That's it. That's the whole show. You did it successfully.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here. And listener, have a lovely day. Bye-bye.
Hasta la vista, baby.